A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Curzon Cinemas podcast. This week we'll be discussing Kenneth Lonergan's awards contender, Manchester by the Sea. I'm Sam Howlett and this week I'm joined by Harry Chapman.
Hello.
And Jake Cunningham.
Hello.
How is everyone?
Very, very well.
Very well.
Yeah, good.
Got over watching Manchester by the Sea yet?
No.
Yeah. I mean, Harry can only drink water this month, so I imagine just watching Manchester by the Sea was just him replenishing the bodily fluids he lost during watching the film.
Yeah, all the water.
Yeah.
Must have been
all
hard.
The water coming out of me.
There's a lot of beer in Manchester by the Sea.
A lot of beer.
Must have been quite hard to watch that.
That was difficult.
Yeah. So in Manchester by the Sea, we follow Lee Chandler, played by Casey Affleck, as he goes back to his hometown of Manchester, Massachusetts, when his older brother dies and he is faced with the possibility that he will have to look after his nephew, played by Lucas Hedges. So my opening question for you this week is, if you could pick one older character in film and one younger character and put them together to recreate that kind of similar dynamic of this kind of sort of awkward parental situation.
Like, and about a boy.
Yeah, exactly. That's the perfect example of Hugh Grant looking after Nicholas Hoult, where they kind of don't get along at first and it's a bit awkward, but eventually there's some love there.
So I'm going with the son figure in this, already someone without a dad. Spider-Man.
Okay.
And
Peter Parker or Spider-Man?
Well, Tom Holland's Spider-Man.
Okay.
Tom Holland's Spider-Man from Captain America Civil War and the upcoming Spider-Man Homecoming. So the current Spider-Man, which I'm sure will be a new one in a year's time.
Yeah.
But the one that we speak at this moment, this Spider-Man, played by Tom Holland, and his dad is going to be Rev, played by Tom Holland.
I wonder how you got there. How did he get there?
How'd you get there, Jake?
How'd he get there?
Yeah, that's good.
That is good.
I like the idea of Spider-Man growing up in a rural English village.
His dad is a reverend.
Yes.
Do you know in About Love, About Time, he plays, Tom Hollander plays a character called Harry Chapman.
Really?
Plays a playwright Harry Chapman, yeah.
I forgot about that character.
Yeah.
That's quite good, his character.
Great name. Solid name.
Yeah.
I didn't know that, Harry.
Yeah.
That's
there you go. Fun fact.
Okay, so Tom Holland raising Tom Holland.
Yes.
Very good. And what would their relationship be like, Jake?
It's safe to say, initially, they might not get along.
Oh.
But I think by the end, after they learn about each other's feelings and that kind of thing.
And faiths.
Yeah. Spider-Man renounces the latex. And becomes a deacon.
A man of the cloth.
Becomes a deacon.
Yeah, he betrays the Christian church. But he goes full silence on this thing.
Full silence.
Never go full silence.
So it's actually a prequel to Silence, because obviously Spider-Man was Andrew Garfield.
So a film set in the 2000s is a prequel to a film set in the 17th century.
Yeah, but they've both got Spider-Man, so it makes sense.
Harry, please answer.
Okay, right. So I've gone for two actors, but I'm going to set the scene.
Yeah.
It's quite meta, so it can be a film within a film.
Ooh.
Okay.
Right, Kaufman.
So I've gone for Sean Connery as the dad.
Yep.
And I've gone for Val Kilmer as a sort of son figure to Sean Connery. Okay, hear me out. So in this meta world, Val Kilmer has been given the role as Bond. No one else wants it. There's been loads of issues.
Yep.
Daniel Craig stayed on for another five films.
So it's Val Kilmer as he is now.
Yeah, as he is now. And Sean...
Wait, Val Kilmer as his current age.
as his current age.
And his current,
his current reputation. No one else has wanted the role. Everyone's been rumoured. A new studio has taken it over and decided Val Kilmer's the person. What they've done is they've got Sean Connery in to train him up to be Bond.
Nice.
And in this, it's going to be a film, because the film's a huge success, but we don't know that. But during the film, they build a relationship, a rapport. He sleeps on Sean Connery's couch. He learns to mock him, do his accent. And then they become like father and son, and he hands over the Bond mantle. And in the first scene of the Val Kilmer Bond film, where he's lost loads of weight, right? He's wearing the last suit Sean Connery wore for his last Bond film.
I like it.
Come on.
Yeah, that's
good. Come on.
I was expecting you to say that Sean Connery was going to be like the Sean Connery role in Last Crusade.
Oh, that would work. Yeah.
And you could bring him in as like James Bond Senior.
Senior.
And he could call Val Kilmer Junior.
Junior.
Yeah, he's not done that before, is he?
No.
It's definitely original.
That would be a new idea, wouldn't it?
That is a new idea, Jake.
Yeah. Good.
My pick is David from Artificial Intelligence. David the robot.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
The young boy, the robot.
I'm glad you're bringing him back.
About time someone did. Underrated film.
Yeah, that's a great film.
And his mentor would be RoboCop.
Awesome. Ooh, that's so good.
So David's mentor in AI is Gigolo Joe. I think who better to replace a gigolo than a man of the law?
Mm.
A strict man
of the law. I think this is what David needs. He needs good guidance. He needs RoboCop.
I'm assuming RoboCop from the remake, yeah?
No, Jake. You assume wrong.
Why not?
We don't talk about that.
Okay.
Original RoboCop, and, you know, teaches him about life as a robot, what they can do, what they can't do.
Is life easy as a robot, Sam?
It's not easy
at all. It's not easy. No.
And who better to do it than the best robot ever? I mean, the Terminator, I think, would not be as paternal. I mean, he's quite paternal in Terminator 2, but maybe he's busy looking after John Connor.
So he's got a lot on.
Yeah, RoboCop, I think, is free at the moment.
Yeah.
He's not looking after any kids, so throw him, David.
Can we do a directorial co-production between Spielberg and Verhoeven?
I think we can and we should, and we will. I don't know what that will look like. I don't think those two things gel well together.
But that's where you... It's like jazz, isn't it?
It is like jazz.
Yeah.
Dissonance.
It's not about the notes they're playing.
It's about the notes they're not playing.
Exactly.
All right, now it's time to talk about something really serious and not funny.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, that's not true.
Oh, that is true. You're right. We'll get to that. Yeah. We'll get to that. So, Manchester by the Sea, as we've mentioned, in describing it to someone, the plot, as I just did to you at the beginning of the show, it doesn't sound that original. A guy goes back to his hometown, is forced to sort of confront his former life there, and finds a new role looking after his nephew. It kind of sounds a bit like Uncle Buck.
You love that.
I love that it's kind of like Uncle Buck. Mm. But there are a lot of these films that we've mentioned about a boy there, this kind of almost fish out of water, a stranger and a child, and the kind of wit, the banter, to use a horrible word, between them. But Manchester by the Sea does something really different with that.
Yeah.
With that really straightforward, simple plot.
Yeah, I think a lot of the time these films can focus on like the relationship of the new relationship rather than the old relationships that they've lost. And I think this focuses more on that as well as this new relationship.
I think that's why in this film there's so many flashbacks.
Yeah.
And that ties the whole thing together, and I think makes it different, because you see why these people are in the situation they're now in, and what's happened to them all to get to this point, that actually the big tragic event that happens right at the beginning isn't like the worst thing that happens in this film.
Yeah.
It's, and actually I think taking a plot that everyone thinks they know and doing it differently is quite a brave thing to do.
Yeah.
And it never moves away from that. Even right at the end, it stays on track with looking at past relationships, and I'm not trying to paint this pretty perfect picture where there's the big hug over emotional music at the end.
Yeah.
And I love that. I think it didn't need it, and it works really well.
Yeah, I think it tells a story that we know really well through cinema, but actually gives it some sense of reality. And it takes us back to where these stories actually come from. Because any story actually evolves from something that's actually happened. But I think these kind of mismatched odd couple stories have gone so far. And it's really great to see something actually grounded back into reality from a convention we really know.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's a really nice way to put it, actually. This kind of, you're drawn into it through familiarity, and then it does something different with that familiarity. So I think this is mainly a film about grief and how people deal with death. Mm. So I mentioned there that the catalyst for the film is that Lee's brother Joe, who is played by Kyle Chandler, he dies, and that is the reason that Lee goes back to his hometown and is sort of reassesses his relationship with his nephew. And also we are given access to Lee's past and explain why he's had to leave Manchester. But there's a lot about how people deal with death. I think this is something that's used in film so much, like how do people deal with death. And even recently we had A Monster Calls, which was a film about how a young child would deal with death.
Yep.
And here it's told in a very sort of both similar and different, I think, to that. But what is it about the way grief's shown here that is really successful and really well handled that other films maybe don't quite get right?
The thing that really struck with me is the comedy.
Yep.
And the way that people will laugh through a funeral and deal with tragedy in their own ways, and that not everyone has seven steps that they have to deal with something.
You're in step three with that.
Yeah. Yeah, eventually I'll reach acceptance and accept that that is the way. But that's not how it works.
No.
But that's not how you can't. This film really doesn't pigeonhole how people behave, even in the most unimaginable circumstances. At no point. And it's not like they're saying, oh, what a mad way to react.
Yeah.
It seems so real. And you think, maybe I wouldn't react like that, but I totally get that. And I think, and it really goes to show just how much different people do really have different feelings. And it suddenly felt like, hang on, we're not seeing this enough.
Mm.
So much time with films that deal with the death of a family member, they tell us how we should be feeling at certain times. And this film doesn't.
Well, I think that's often why people feel guilty if they don't feel certain ways when people in real life die.
Mm.
Because they're given this perspective that you have to break down and cry, or you have to feel a certain way, or you have to be in mourning for a certain amount of time. I think for me that's epitomised with the nephew's got two girlfriends.
Yeah.
I can't remember their name. They've got very similar names. And one of them's got brown hair and is at the kitchen table. And Lee's trying to sort the funeral arrangements because he's trying to get stuff done. Because in situations like that, you kind of forget that things need to be sorted, and this is such a huge change. And she's like, you seem to be really insensitive. Can you not see he's upset? And he's just eating his breakfast. And you realise that actually, people deal with stuff in such different ways. And you can't pigeonhole, as you said, you can't pigeonhole people into certain ways. And, you know, as soon as he gets to the hospital, Lee's reaction is not breaking down crying.
Yeah.
He's just really stone-faced. And really, he looks like almost he doesn't care. Obviously he does, but he's just trying to somehow deal with this internally, and people do that in different ways.
Yeah, I think when someone dies, you never react how you think you're going to react, because you're so numbed by the shock almost, and as well, you don't know how to express how you actually feel, because you just it's such a weird thing for you that this person you know so well is now dead, that you really can't bring yourself to even contemplate what you're thinking or what you're feeling. So often I think just being stony-faced and just kind of numb to it for a while is quite a common thing, but as you said, there is no one way to react to death, and this film really gets that.
Yeah, I think a lot. The film is held together by Lucas Hedges, who is the nephew, who is really excellent in this, and I think even more so than Casey Affleck. But with Casey Affleck's character Lee, we're given backstory and we're given flashbacks and stuff, whereas Lucas Hedges, we don't get as much to go on. And so the way that he reacts to things is at first even more confusing or alienating.
Yeah.
But then, again, he's just dealing with things, how he's going to deal with it. And it's at points quite inspiring what he's doing as well. The fact that his dad has just died, and he's like, oh, I've got band practice.
Yeah. I just want to go back and play hockey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But fair enough. And you can totally get that because we don't want to over-therapize this and say, like, oh, he's using the hockey as a vessel, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's using playing in the band to take out his feelings. He might be. He might not be. But he's just doing what he
thinks. But you don't think about it, do you?
No.
When stuff like that happens, you just think, I'll do things and deal with stuff, and stuff will work and stuff won't work. And that,
yeah, the world hasn't stopped revolving.
Yeah, exactly.
I still have to go on with my life while also this horrible thing has happened. I mean, there's one scene in particular, I think, because it's too cold for them to bury Joe at this time of year. They have to put him in a freezer and wait until the spring. And you can tell that Lucas Hedges' character is really uncomfortable with this, the thought of that his dad... I think this is something that really reminds him that his dad is dead, that he is now being put in a freezer. And there's a bit later on where he is like his own freezer at home, and like some frozen chicken falls out, and he just completely breaks down, almost has a panic attack.
Mm.
And because when people, I think, like, you don't react when you first hear someone has died, you don't immediately, like you said, break down and cry.
Yeah.
It takes a while for it to sink in, and a weird thing will set you off and remind you, and just sort of like reality hitting you in the face with that moment. And he thinks he's something wrong with him, and he looks like he's having a heart attack or a panic attack or something. Because his body is finally reacting to the death, and he doesn't know how to handle that and how to deal with it.
Mm.
And even Casey Affleck is just confused.
Yeah, well, that's where the relationship's so nice between the two of them. Because Casey Affleck's like, I've never had to deal with this.
Yeah, I don't know what to do.
I don't know what to do. Like, no one really knows what to do in that situation, but him in particular.
Yeah.
And that
who's so emotionally unavailable.
Exactly. Yeah. That's where their relationship really starts to seem to build, anyway.
Absolutely, yeah. Okay, so, well, seeing as we're talking about Casey Affleck and Lucas Hedges, let's talk about the performances, because I think this film, as we said, it's very very simple plot. It's also quite simply made. Would you agree? There's no kind of cinematic flourish at any point. There's no, like, weird camera angles or any kind of
visual... No, the
visual...
shots are quite still. Actually.
Yeah,
that
I think...
Quite still.
But that's not to say that it
that's
doesn't
not a criticism
look...
at all.
No,
right?
No.
I think it's similar to Spotlight in the... When you're dealing with this serious subject matter and trying to make it realistic, the director, so in this case Kenneth Lonergan, who is also the writer, has kind of, I don't know if it's his personal style, but it seems like he's maybe taken a step back.
Well, he was using a new DP on this,
right,
who he had not worked with before, and I believe it was quite a contentious relationship before they actually got to shoot. But then actually there, because everything was on location, they just found that there was just ways that you had to shoot things and ways that you couldn't. So, like, they had shots in their heads that they had planned out. And then when you get there and you say, oh, well, we wanted a shot of them walking along the harbour and we wanted it horizontal against the frame, but, like, the pier stops. Mm. We can't go any further, so we'll just have to change. And I think they've worked in harmony with the place they're in.
Definitely. I mean, in that respect, it does look great because... this place that none of us have heard of or been to, Manchester in Massachusetts. It does. It's this really picturesque dock town. You know, Manchester by the sea, and there's a lot of sort of boats and sort of this kind of harbour mentality, and it sort of looks like it smells of kind of beer and salt.
Yeah.
Which Sam also smells of.
Absolutely, yeah. New fragrance for men.
I think also in terms of, there's so much natural lighting in it,
yeah,
the whole thing, and I think that goes along the spotlight thing,
yeah,
because things are a bit, you know, serious topics are being dealt with and serious things are obviously being dealt with, but they're not afraid, they're not trying to, you know, dim the lights or make it rain or change the weather to manipulate how you feel. That's never done, you know. It's still, if it's sunny, it's going to be sunny. If it's raining, it's not to manipulate it.
Exactly. It's
or
just
snowing.
It's just the way things are.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's how the whole film has that approach. This is just the way things are. And also, there's something else I noticed, because I've seen it twice. I don't think there are any close-ups of any character.
Right.
So the camera is really restrained.
Yeah.
There's not a close-up on a character crying or a close-up on a character's emotion. Everything's usually got at least two people in the frame at once. And if there's only one person, there's a lot of space around them.
Yeah.
The camera's far back. The camera's letting the performances have room to breathe, I think.
Yeah, and I think we were talking about the way that people react to grief. I think this film really looks at the the physical reaction.
Mm.
You mentioned the freezer, the way that he reacts as if it's a panic attack as well, and by using that wider camera angle, you can see how the whole of a person reacts to it, rather than breaking it down to a
facial expression
or a hand shaking or something. By seeing that whole person, you can feel all of their movement at once and their whole reaction.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so let's talk about those performances that we think the cameras really worked well with to give this film the emotion it deserves. So let's start with the big one. Casey Affleck, who plays Lee Chandler, is our protagonist. We start the film with him. We end the film with him. He's in near enough every scene. It's really, it's been sold as his film. And he is, as we record, he is the favourite to win the Oscar for Best Actor. Happy about that. Think it's deserved. He won the Golden Globe last weekend. So he's on his way.
Yeah, in terms of from what I've seen so far, I can't see anyone else really necessarily touching him. I think because it's so his film, and he's in it so much, that just gives the plaudits more and more, and they can give him more and more for doing that. I haven't seen that many films that I think do that and give the sort of lead actor that much screen time and that much of the story. So yeah, at the moment I can't see anyone touch you, but that may well change in the next couple of months.
Sure.
I think I'd be inclined to agree. We've still got things to come out here.
Absolutely.
In the UK.
Yeah.
But as it stands, I would expect this award to go to him. It's a performance where you can look at him in each shot and see there could be so many things being thought by this character that we don't quite see, but you can see all those layers in him, even if it's just a blank face. It's amazing how, even when he's so expressionless, that you
which
can
is most of the film,
but you that gives off so much information.
Absolutely. So going back to this whole thing about how people react to death, in most of the film no one ever says how they're really feeling. And I think that's a really true when you're bereaved. How are you doing? I'm fine. No one ever says, you know, actually, I'm really not fine. You always just say, oh, yeah, I'm fine. And he's absolutely the same. I don't think he ever tells anyone how he's feeling, apart from maybe in one scene, which we'll talk about towards the end.
Well, he's quite a typical male character.
Yeah.
Like, he drinks beer.
The strong,
like,
silent
he
type.
He drinks beers and he, you know, hangs out with his mates and his male friends. And they, live by the harbour and they're sort of a bit unshaven and sort of... They're very, very, like, traditionally blokey characters, and he fits within.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Nah. And actually, that's why I think this performance is so good, because seeing an emotional man, we still don't see that much of that. It's often female characters or slightly more effeminate characters, if I can say that. We don't see as many, like, sort of manly men go through something like this, or what we perceive as manly men going through this. And I think that's why the performance is going to catch the eye of so many people.
Yeah.
But what you said about he just says, I'm fine, and not many people say what they're feeling in the film. What I like about the film is that it doesn't tell us that's a bad thing.
Yeah.
I feel really connected to that aspect of it, that sometimes people don't want to talk about something, and it's not because they can't bring themselves to. It's just that's the way that they're feeling right now, and that's all right.
Yeah.
And I really, really liked that about the film, that we don't need to get people to a point where it's okay to talk and you can let it out and I'm here and all of that. It's like, yeah, you do you.
But yeah. I think there is a point that there still needs to be people there for when you have that moment. I think it's less about the asking and more just about
what do they want? The whole film's just
about being there. And yeah. What do people want? And yeah. if you're there for when that moment happens, then great, deal with it.
Mm.
Yeah, like the bit with the freezer. You know, that sort of
just as he. I mean, he. Yeah, when his nephew's in this room, really crying and really upset, and he sort of tells Casey Affleck to go away. He says, "Okay, I'm just going to sit here until you calm down. We don't have to talk." Yeah. I think that really sums up what we're talking about here.
Yeah, really.
I'm just
going
to be here. We don't need to talk about anything at all, and they don't.
Yeah,
they never have really a kind of big, meaningful talk, which you'd expect from this kind of film. Mm. They're just there for each other, which is really nice to see.
That's important as well for each other as well.
Yeah, yeah. It's like a two-way relationship.
Yeah, it works both ways.
And there is a lot of silent conversations.
Yeah, really. There's one really awkward one with one of the nephew's girlfriend's mums, and they're just kind of sitting there all together, and the mum actually goes up and says, "Can you hurry up, please? I really can't sit with him any longer. We have nothing to talk about. He's been quiet for half an hour."
Yeah,
there is that's really important because there are, yeah, we've been talking about grief and relationship, but there are so many funny moments in this, that surprisingly funny moments where you just think, like, I'm laughing, and then suddenly you're taken away from it, and then you're brought back.
Well, even the very, very start of the film is like almost laugh out loud funny.
Oh yeah, when he says to the woman who he's fixing her shower.
Yeah,
yeah, that's really funny, but also kind of mean as well.
Yeah, I mean, like, but you get a lot from that. It's funny, but the way that he reacts to it, you learn a lot about his character from someone's placing her attraction on him.
Yeah,
and the way that he deals with that and shuts that down, immediately we get a sense of what Lee is like.
Yeah, and even from those few scenes and his living situation, you can just see that he's so broken and so kind of empty as well, that he just doesn't care about anything anymore. He'll say whatever he wants, he'll do whatever he wants, but not in a kind of arrogant way, just in he's got nothing to live for, but nothing to really hold him back from saying what he feels.
Yeah, often. And he's not going to push to achieve things.
Yeah.
I think it's like a thread that's sort of dangled in front of you.
Yeah.
You sort of go for it, and then you're sort of going along, and then
there's no one to tell him stop pulling that thread.
Yeah, exactly.
He doesn't even think about it anymore. I think just sort of describing him sort of empty but also full at the same time. There's kind of nothing going on in his face, but then there's also so much in him that's never let out. All right, so Lucas Hedges there, young upcoming actor, nearly steals the film from Casey Affleck, I think.
Definitely, he's excellent. We just mentioned that balance between humour and grieving. He's the epitome of it. He is really funny, and he's really sharp as well. He's got some of the funniest bits where...
Some good comebacks.
Where Lee has cut his hand, and he asks, "Oh, what happened to your hand?" And he says, "Oh, I cut it."
Oh,
and
gosh,
he replies and said, "Oh, good. I was worried what happened."
He's also the epitome of a teenager, though.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, he has, you know, obviously this event's happened, but he has such ups and downs with everything in his life. That, you know, like, the first thing we're introduced, he's playing hockey, and he starts swearing off to the coach. And, like, you're instantly given this idea of, like, oh, he's going to be this super, like, aggressive... like teenager, and then it's completely flipped. The next thing we see him, you know, with his girlfriend, just sitting quietly, having some nice time. And then the next thing we see him in a band, telling off the drummer. Like he's like lots of teenagers. He's so many different personalities around different people, and I think that's such a skill that the actor does that.
Yeah, I'd forgotten about the drummer. The drummer suffers.
Otto.
Yeah, he really.
You're way behind.
Yeah. Those band sequences are very funny as well.
They're quite uncomfortable.
Yeah.
They're one of the most uncomfortable parts of the film because they're so
true.
Sort of really, they think they're so good.
Yeah.
Like, I watched Sing Street yesterday and they're a really good teenage band. And then watching this a day later is just, these are so bad, but they think they're so good.
Yeah.
That's
and take it so
dream,
seriously.
Isn't it?
And I was in a band like that. We thought we were. the bomb.
And yeah, we were. And that band was called Sing Street.
were you Otto, Sam?
I was Otto,
oh,
yeah.
Oh, no.
I was way behind. yeah, Lucas Hedges, I think we'll be seeing a lot more of him, hopefully. Harry, we spoke earlier and you really liked Kyle Chandler in this one, didn't you?
Yeah, I think we were talking about films that he'd been in recently, and he'd been in Carol, and was it Wolf of Wall Street?
He's in Wolf of Wall Street, he's the FBI agent, he's in Super 8, he's in Friday Night Lights.
In Super 8, he's one of my favourite dads. He's such a dad, Kyle Chandler. You look at his face and you think, that's a dad.
Written
all over
but
him.
He's so watchable on screen. I think he has such a presence because he's quite a big man as well. Mm. But every scene he's in, I think he's so watchable and adds so much to all their relationships. And you know, obviously he's mainly in the flashbacks, but it makes such a difference, and he builds such a story of relationship between him and his son, him and his brother,
him and his wife
as well. And I think he does. I found myself just following him wherever he was on screen, because you had such, as we talked about earlier, you had such still camera work, but you could just see him coming and going and doing stuff.
Yeah.
And I thought he brought a really nice sort of centre to the film.
Definitely. Yeah.
He was sort of that in between his brother, who's sort of cold and cut off. He's that sort of like blokey guy.
Yeah.
But he's still that caring dad and that caring brother, and he still gave everything. And I think it's so important.
Because he is that key link between every member of the cast.
Yeah.
When he is gone, you feel that vacuum.
You miss him.
Yeah. And yet you don't see him in the real time. You don't see him in the film.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you can see in the short time that he's there what people are missing.
And what he meant to these people as well.
Yeah.
And he is, like, often in films they sort of talk about people being really nice, and you sort of don't get it. But this, I think you really get that he is a really nice guy, a really nice dad, nice brother.
Yeah.
And you're right, when his death, you really get that his death is affecting these people just from his performance. And yeah, I think there's a film coming out soon, I hope, that he gets a lead in, because I think he's meant for bigger things.
Whether he's picking them or people are picking him,
who knows?
He is picking some great roles for himself. I mean, Friday Night Lights as a TV show was great. So, like, he's doing the right things. I hope he's given a big
definitely.
Role soon.
Yeah, I especially the second time, actually, I really appreciate him a lot more, I think. And then the last cast member I think we need to talk about is Michelle Williams, who plays Lee's ex-wife, Randy, who's in a surprisingly little amount compared
she was gonna be
to
in
the marketing.
More.
Yeah, I think the marketing would, and the awards...
She's also the second billed actor in the film.
Yeah, it would lead you to believe she was... sort of a supporting in the larger supporting sense of the word, in the Rooney Mara in Carol sense of the word.
Yeah.
She's still very, very good in the scenes that she had. And it's we watched Silence of the Lambs this week and reminded by how little screen time Anthony Hopkins has.
Yeah.
And then still went away with an actor or Academy Award.
Yeah.
And he was that lead.
He won Best Lead Actor, considering he's in 16 minutes of the film.
Oh, really?
Right.
Yeah. Because Judi Dench was in Shakespeare in Love for 8 minutes.
And she won Best Supporting Actress.
And she won Best Supporting Actress. So not length
absolutely.
Is not important.
Michelle Williams, I think, the performance is kind of defined by two scenes.
Yeah. And I think she's there to serve... it's how she is remembered by others rather than her own character.
Yeah.
It's more about what she meant to Lee than to be her own character, which is fair because it's his film.
Mm.
But I think, she's in about a couple of scenes, but two big scenes, which we'll talk about at the end. But she absolutely acts the hell out of those scenes.
But she didn't overact.
No.
That's crucial.
This is it.
She doesn't, she doesn't, you know, she's not breaking down crying.
No,
there's
she
not,
commands
there's
them.
Not the
she
emotional music.
The
there's
she's
not
in.
The her massively hugging Lee at any point.
Yeah.
She's that takes such control.
Yeah.
But she's given that space to do it. I think the camera work gives her that space to do it. The direction she's been given, whatever she's been told how to do the character, gives her that time and space that she doesn't need to overdo it. And, we talked about she's in two big scenes. They're never rushed. They're not scenes where you feel like everything's rushing to a point. It feels like, they're important on their own.
Yeah. And I think when I was watching it, because I was aware of the billing and I was aware of the nominations, and so when I was watching the film, I was also aware that she wasn't appearing in what I was watching.
Yeah.
So like, when she came on screen, part of me was thinking, oh, this is it. This is going to be the big, this is the Oscar scene. This is the Wayne's World bit with the,
yeah,
with the throwing water in her face. But it is not like that at all. She just handles it. And she, just imagine coming on set and just doing that and then leaving. Like everyone on that set watching must have been amazed that someone could come on and carry the weight of such a role and handle it in such a brief amount of time.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're going to get into spoilers in just a second, but I think that this film is out on the same day wide release as La La Land. Two very different films, and I think they both deserve equal audience viewership. One's very happy, one's quite sad, but they're both really rewarding.
Mm.
And I think if you go out and see not just one, see both of these films, I think you'll be very happy that you did.
Yep. And if you're going to do a double bill, do Manchester by the Sea first. Don't do what I did.
Okay. So if you haven't seen the film, go and watch it and then come back, listen to the end of this show. We're going to talk about all things Manchester by the Sea now, all the ins and outs. So let's get rid of the elephant in the room, the fire.
God.
Oh, my.
I'm sorry that we have to talk about it, God. But we do.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's built up a fair amount that something horrible happened to Lee while he was in Manchester.
But initially they... Because you hear it from two hockey players.
Is that the Lee Chandler?
Yeah, is that the Lee Chandler? But I thought he might be some sort of hockey star or something.
Yeah.
And then that did not happen.
No.
Well, there was some sense of abuse from the townspeople as
well. Yeah, sort of, he gets funny looks. And
he's told not to come back to certain places.
Yeah. I think it's not never said, but I think it's kind of clear that he's in some kind of self-imposed exile.
Mm.
And going back to Manchester is not... at the top of the list of things he wants to do.
Well, he says at the end, and it's a lovely scene at the table, he just says, I can't beat it.
Yeah.
I can't beat it. And he doesn't say, like, I can't beat it because this is what happened, and then explain the
plot.
We
know,
We know what happened.
Yeah.
He just says, I can't beat it, and there's an understanding between him and his nephew that...
And the audience as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
The beauty of the film is the restraint in the script and the absolute faith that the audience... are smart and they will get everything with as little information as possible.
So
this scene, the build-up is quite horrible. He's in the lawyer's office and it sort of cuts back and forth between that night and him sitting there reflecting, and it starts off with this scene of complete almost slapstick humor. He's got loads of his mates around, they're playing ping pong, they're drunk, the wife's telling them off, and as they're driving away he's kind of like sort of, you know, telling, oh, don't drink and drive, ha ha, these. And it's funny, but you're kind of clenched as well. Like something really horrible is going to happen.
Yeah,
I don't like this.
It's again like the whole film taking a sort of cliched scene, which we'd see a million times, and then normally the husband would go in and get told off by his wife.
Someone's sleeping on the sofa.
Yeah, exactly.
Tonight.
Yeah. Exactly.
He's in the doghouse.
But you're never expecting Michelle Williams' character to say that to him. You're, as you said, you're always clenched.
Mm.
You're always just waiting.
But I think you get a real sense of the love between them
those
moments.
They start laughing.
They both think it's quite funny what's just happened. I mean, as annoyed as she is at him, she is kind of thinking, oh, that Lee.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of that to it. And something else that I found this time that's really well done, because what happens is a log rolls out of the fireplace. We never see the fireplace. Loads of films, as he leaves the house... would do a shot of the fireplace, kind of as a sort of pre-warning that, oh, he hasn't put the screen on that. We don't even know where the fireplace is in the house.
Yeah, or at least an earlier scene.
Yeah.
He would have been like, oh, better put a log on the fire. Never happened.
It's never even referenced. It just happens. And when these things happen in life that you make these mistakes, you don't think of it.
Yeah.
And I think that's important that he didn't think of it and neither should we. And it's such a shock when he comes back and finds his house ablaze. That we feel that shock as he does as well. And Jake, you mentioned earlier to me before we started recording the whole thing about the paper bag in this scene.
Yeah, and so this was... I was listening to Kenneth Lonergan doing an interview about this, and he wrote this into the script that he wanted Lee to have a bag of shopping at this point. Mm. And he just said that on set, Casey Affleck, he did his job and he was brilliant in it. But he just said, I still don't get the bag. And then when they watched the film and they spoke afterwards, like, I get the bag.
Yeah.
Like, at this point, he is holding on to the only thing that he has.
Yeah.
And it just so happens to be the only thing in the world he has at that point is a bag of shopping. And at the end, he's just holding on to it as hard as he can.
And he picks it back up at the end.
Yeah.
He sort of, once the fire's been put out and Joe is sort of holding him and like consoling him, he picks the bag back up.
Mm.
That's where Carl Chandler's so strong, a strong character.
His facial expression there is absolutely devastating. Yeah. For me, that's not even the saddest scene in the film. For me, it's the fire, the police station.
Oh, God.
Which, and even just that interview. When he says, yes, we were drinking, someone was passing around marijuana, we had cocaine. He's admitting all his mistakes. He admits he didn't put the screen on. And then they let him go and he says, that's it? You're letting me go? Yeah, we're not going to crucify you for making a mistake. And I think he really expects and wants to be put in prison at that point. He wants to be locked away. He wants to be punished for what he's done because he's killed his children. Mm. It's his fault they're dead, in a way.
Yeah.
And he really wants to be punished. And he's so just sort of... He can't believe he now has to live the rest of his life normally. Now this has happened.
Well, you compared it, we spoke earlier, and you compared it to slightly to a Monster Calls in terms of he constantly in a Monster Calls has these where he does stuff wrong and he goes, are you not going to punish me? And no one punishes him at any point.
Yeah.
And to a lesser extent, that's a very similar sort of
definitely
wanting to be punished and wanting to feel something and wanting to be. And that's what Casey Affleck's character does during the whole film. That's why he gets drunk and gets into fights.
Mm.
Because he wants to feel something. Because he's emotionally numb.
Yeah.
He wants someone to punch him in the face. Because that might make
bring
him feel something
out of him.
That might bring something.
Yeah.
And that's why he's emotionally cut off. Because he's not able to express himself and tell people his emotions.
And that's like going back to the very start of what we were talking about. Why we like this film so much is that we don't have a therapist over our shoulder going, you only get into these fights because you feel like you need to feel something. Like, Lonergan, he lets us be clever enough to understand that.
Absolute faith in the audience really wins this film over for everyone, I think.
Yeah, and you mentioned the police station scene as well. When he reaches for the gun...
I didn't expect that.
Like, that's the most that my stomach has dropped all year. Just horrible.
Really, that's really horrible. And it doesn't work, and he's saying, please let me do it, and Carl Chandler jumps up, but one of the most devastating shots for that is his dad, who's not really at that much, the brother's father. He just kind of, he just stands and sort of watches. He's sort of half standing, half sitting, just so does not know what to do right now. He's just seen his son attempt to shoot himself in the head, and he's so just sort of, I can't do anything, I don't know what to do.
I think it's important that, just touching upon it briefly, that his dad isn't in it that much because it makes so much more of the, you know, of the death of the brother.
Yeah, his like brother Carl almost Chandler was his dying. Father figure.
Yeah, almost, but also was the link between everyone.
Yeah.
If you'd first of all started it with the dad dying and then gone on, then it wouldn't make as much of the brother's death. But
absolutely.
By having one death, one funeral, one moment that crystallizes everything horrible and wrong and great and amazing in their lives, I think is so important, and that's probably why the dad isn't in it that much.
Yeah, and there's even a nice sort of reveal about the boat name as well at the end, that it's the name of their mother as well, which is never stated. It's just a nice little, on the graveyard, a nice little reveal there. Again, just solidifying how important this family was to each other.
Yeah,
they've now been sort of broken apart, but are trying to still hold on to what they've got left.
Going on what we've been talking about throughout, when if you believe that a family is meant to be that close, then you can also believe that a family don't need to tell each other everything to understand each other.
Absolutely.
Yeah, even Lee and Patrick, even though they haven't spent the most amount of time together, they clearly do have a bond between them, and that things can go unspoken, and it's completely believable.
And they can swear at each other, they can be quite horrible to each other at times and just give these sort of snippy comebacks to each other, but they're still fine.
Yeah, and I think that's true of a lot of uncle relationships.
Yeah, I was about to say, it's such an uncle relationship.
Yeah.
Because it's not a brother where you're that close, but it's also not a father where you can't have that sort of...
Yeah,
you can't say that to your son, but you can say what
it says
to your nephew.
Yeah,
definitely. Okay, so we're going to wrap up there. So a big thank you to CSR, as always, for letting us use their studio. And so after watching Manchester by the Sea, if you're intrigued by Casey Affleck and some of his previous films, his old works, on Cousin Home Cinema right now, you can watch 999, Lonesome Jim, and The Killer Inside Me. Each one very different, but each one kind of led by Casey Affleck, and he's a really interesting actor at the moment, I think.
Yeah. Yep. My recommendation for this week would be, if you're looking for another odd couple,
yeah,
father-son figure comedy-drama hybrid.
Yeah.
That also has melancholic moments.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Then Hunt for the Wilder People has just been added as well, with Sam Neill and Julian Dennison, directed by Taika Waititi, who did What We Do in the Shadows, and it's really lovely, so do check that out.
Absolutely. So please go out and watch Manchester by the Sea. It's released today on January the 13th, and you can see it in Curzon Cinemas nationwide. So that's goodbye from Jake.
Goodbye.
Goodbye from Harry.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from me. We'll see you next week.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.